It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna. We're coming to you very quickly after Brian Kelly's first media availability since right after the South Florida game, roughly when things shut down about 2 days later. And then we also got a chance to talk to head trainer Rob Hunt about some of Notre Dame's protocols, what's working, what's not, what needs to change. Matt, you were on the call too. Overall, I mean, I thought it was incredibly insightful, and especially Rob Hunt really cut to the chase on a lot of, I think, questions that people had and uncertainties about how long you can come back from isolation when you have a positive test, what that actually means, how the quarantine works, and basically how Notre Dame ended up with an outbreak on its hands. I know some people have pushed back on the notion that it was, you know, outbreak isn't the right term, but when your head trainer uses it, it was an outbreak. When you're shutting down your program for about a week, that's an outbreak. So what was the most interesting takeaway from that, aside from just the numbers of how long guys are out and what they expect to have back this weekend?
Good news out of bad news, if that makes sense. I mean, they're going to practice today, and knock on wood, barring any surprises in the next week. Next week's game against Florida State is on, which is probably a bad thing for Florida State, but yeah, we'll get to that next week. Appreciate Rob Hunt and Brian Kelly doing it. I mean, they answered every question. They were not defensive. They were not rah-rah about this. I mean, said it before, Brian Kelly has been publicly and privately, based on that South Florida locker room speech, as proactive as anyone, I think, in his business about stomping this thing out, taking care of it, following all the rules, and making sure they can do things safely. And so I'm sure there's a part of him that's really frustrated, whether it's at himself, whether it's at his players, whomever. But there's definitely some frustration there, because, as Rob Hunt said, we were a little loose in our protocols looking back, and we need to tighten those things up. And so I'll be curious about more specifics of that as they move forward. And one thing I'll be interested in, we won't know the answer to this till the end of the month now, what is traveling going to be like for this group, and what's eating on the road going to be like for this group, because they haven't had to do that yet, and sounds like they were a little loose with doing it at home.
Yeah, I thought that was the question I had for Hunt, was basically, as you look back at the team meal that was believed to be the source of the outbreak, do you look at that and say, hey, our team meal protocols need to change, or our players need to essentially get with the program a little bit more? It certainly seems like there's room on both sides for, you know, you to say both. So that's something, you know, the way Brian Kelly described it, the gist of it seems to be they'll take, instead of having their team meals at the hotel downtown South Bend, they'll probably move them across the street to the Century Center, which is a huge space, if anyone has ever actually been in there. And then, Rob Hunt used the term zero tolerance with mask compliance. So that, I think you wrote about it in a South Florida story, whoever the mysterious Mike was who didn't have his mask on. I'm not being flippant about it. Like, there's going to be a lot less, hey, come on, could you put your mask on, and more like, get the heck out of here, I'm guessing, is how they're going to do that.
Speaking of masks, we'd be remiss not to mention the president of said university.
Yeah, right.
Found himself in the middle of a storm here. And I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but anytime the student newspaper has an editorial that says, frankly, this is embarrassing, as its headline, and completely tears you to shreds, as the president of said university, we're talking, of course, about the Notre Dame St. Mary's College Observer and the Reverend John Jenkins, Notre Dame's president. I'm sorry. I mean, this has been quite a run for student newspaper editorials between North Carolina a couple weeks ago, using the term cluster. I won't go all the way
there. It's a family podcast.
Cluster something. Yes. cluster fertilizer, and now saying this is embarrassing in a headline. I'm not gonna get a make her sign a petition to get this guy out of office the way some people on campus.
Oh my goodness!
Are. but I don't disagree with anything that's in that editorial. I mean, the two biggest faces of this university are the president and the football team, and for different reasons, both of them have found themselves in the center of this thing over the last 10 days because of lax protocols. Again, for different reasons, and. I just think that's got to be really frustrating for the common Notre Dame student, especially when you've been told over the last 6 weeks, look at the football team. They're a model example of how everything has been, if you follow the rules, everything will be fine, and we're going to get through this. And you got Father Jenkins threatening to send you home, and now there's this. So,
yeah, and I think one way to look at that is I would be more concerned if I was Notre Dame football and the players were following all the protocols like religiously, that there wasn't the need to tighten things up, or you know, there wasn't the examples of players getting loose. Because if that hadn't happened and you had an outbreak, if this was a failure of your protocols or just the fact that you can't beat this back, and maybe you've been sort of fortunate to date, then I would be more concerned if I was Notre Dame. So if I think, you know, changing human behavior, while tricky for college kids or anyone, is something you have some control over, in a way that I think would give Notre Dame a little bit of comfort that, you know, if your meal protocols are you're at an 8-foot table, there are 4 seats at the table, stay at those 4 seats, don't have 2 or 3 guys sort of slide in and join the group, which I think is sort of what college football players are want to do because that's how they're conditioned to behave in those kind of settings when they're together. I thought that Rob Hunt's commentary about kind of a false sense of security about a negative test was interesting because I think for most people we view, okay, if you're negative, that means you have zero coronavirus in your body, you're fine. You could catch it from somebody else, but if everyone in your group is negative, then there's no risk of transmission. And he's like, well, that's not really how it works. Because when you take some of these antigen tests in particular, the PCR tests, you can sort of set your adjustments to pick up viral load at a certain level. And if your viral load is below that level, you'll test negative. If your viral load is above that level, you'll test positive. But just because you have a negative test doesn't mean you have nothing in your system. And that, I think it's sort of, there was a little bit of a false sense of security there. So again, that's a human behavior that I think Notre Dame could probably work to stamp out or at least get corrected.
Despite what the internet may tell you, folks, Pete Sampson and I did wear masks during our apple picking excursion over Saturday, and I did not ride his shoulders, and it was glorious.
Yeah.
You bring up an interesting point about a wake-up call and how, in some ways, it's better, not better, but the alternative, whereas if they followed every protocol and this happened, would be a very, very big alarm for not just Notre Dame, but probably everyone for the rest of the college football season. Yeah. If it's simply tightening their protocols and doing better, yes. I mean, you asked Brian Kelly this or Rob Hunt this, you asked one of them this. There's no margin for error now that you've rescheduled one game. Like, you've got one bye week left. Like, you cannot screw around anymore, and that's going to be more strictly enforced than it was before, which, as we've seen, Brian Kelly, especially at that South Florida game in the locker room, really, really drilled into his players. I'll share with you a text from someone from South Florida this past week. Brian Kelly, before he spoke to us today, he spoke to Heather Dinich of ESPN.com on Wednesday, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday, and said pretty much what he ended up saying today as far as the team meal procedure, how this happened. He did mention someone vomited on the sideline during the game, which did not come up, and I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of that, out of respect for whoever was sick. But someone in South Florida texted me after that ESPN story ran with Brian Kelly and said, I read this and I think, duh, shrug emoji. We've been doing things in smaller groups, spread out, larger spaces, et cetera, since July, end quote. It's tough to compare one team to another when we're not in the room with each other. But yeah, certainly it sounds like Notre Dame is taking a good hard look at itself in the mirror right now and is hell-bent on making sure this doesn't happen again. And let's hope it doesn't. was it 7, I think, for South Florida versus 39 for Wake Forest as far as who wouldn't be able to play. Big margin in between there, and it would depend on which positions are the ones that are most decimated. Brian Kelly himself had said, look, if we're down to one guy at a certain position, we can't responsibly ask him to play the full game. It just as a note for our listeners, I think most places are doing this, but the athletics policy is not to identify anyone who tested positive unless they do so themselves publicly. So I know there's a lot of rumors and innuendo out there. We're not going to get into that unless said individuals decide to come forth themselves. But it was definitely a dicey situation for Notre Dame, and it sounds like in the short term since they've flattened the curve, so to speak, and are getting back at it. And may get some guys back from normal injuries, which Brian Kelly was for once happy to talk about.
Well, I mean, for starters, it's you're at 39 last weekend for Wake Forest. Rob Hunt said today they're at 29, and then in 2 days' time they'll be down to 15. So that's the expected. They'll have cut 14 out of the 29 to get down to 15 by the weekend. They're going to scrimmage on Saturday or on Sunday. You know, Kyle Hamilton returned from an injury, Ben Skoranek returned from a hamstring, and then Kevin Austin, I think, you know, we've been through enough Brian Kelly return from injury press conferences to know when he says that he can participate and will be cleared, that means he'll probably warm up and then maybe could get in at the end of the game, but it's probably not somebody that's going to be relied upon. You know, so I think if you're looking for the first catch for Kevin Austin in a meaningful situation, I'm excluding up 40-3 against Florida State in the fourth quarter from that. You know, you're probably waiting for Louisville, maybe even Pittsburgh for that. So, but it's good news regardless, because the broken foot is, you know, and all the starts and stops to his rehab has been a challenge. You know, I thought that I'm trying to think of what else really stood out. Yeah, the locker room, I'm not really sure how you fix that necessarily, because I think, you know, when they say locker room, you're going to be talking about the locker room in the Goog, which I think they have much more control over. And sure, it sounds like that's where the changes will be. But then the locker room post game, I'm not sure how that's supposed to work. I mean, you see the video of Kelly talking to the team after South Florida. Everyone's jammed in there. You know, masks are on, but, you know, sometimes they're pulled up, sometimes they're a little bit down. I'm not sure what the solution is for that. And then you had mentioned sort of travel. You know, the locker rooms at Heinz Field will be fine. It's an NFL stadium. The locker rooms at North Carolina, Bobby Dodd Stadium in Atlanta, and certainly Wake Forest, that's a pretty big challenge.
Wake's home locker room, which I've been in, is not big.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what the solution is for those kind of moments, because that seems pretty tricky to me.
So it's funny you mentioned Pittsburgh. Rob Hunt was asked, and this is a good question because I was wondering this myself, and I've been wondering it really throughout the country as we see different teams use different procedures. Rob Hunt was asked, do you think some of this could be traced to mingling with families post-game?
Yeah, this was a good one.
People coming from all over the country, bringing it on the campus without knowing it, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, we really don't think that happened. It's an easy, you know, conclusion to make from the outside looking in, but it does not appear that that was the case. And good to hear that, one, because my first reaction when I heard all this was, is their first next step for an enhanced protocol to ban families from the stands? And funny enough, Pat Narduzzi, Pittsburgh coach, Pittsburgh has not had, and they're an NFL stadium, they haven't had anyone in there, no families, nothing. He was asked this week about getting fans in the stands for Pittsburgh games. And he said, I want them there because they're coming to campus either way to see their kids. And what they're doing when they're not here, when they're not in our building or in a suite watching their kids play for 3 hours, they're probably going to someone's house or a bar to watch the game and then meeting their kids. And that's not healthy for anyone, because they want to come and see their kids, and we're not going to stop them from doing that. So we're going to ask the government to allow us to do that. So, which was an interesting way. I hadn't thought about it. My first reaction was, all right, ban parents. This will, you know, take one risk out of the equation, but it sounds like that's going to be there no matter what. And it sounds like for Notre Dame's case, thankfully, probably didn't have anything to do with this.
Yeah, talking to parents about it, just sort of as an aside, I do get the sense like the contact is very restricted and limited. It's not, they're not having the Friday night at the DoubleTree parent gathering in the lobby. You know, if you watch the Showtime series from 5 years ago, there was a bunch of shots from there. And, you know, Friday nights before games, there's a lot of mingling, a lot of carrying on and whatnot. And I don't think any of that really happens anymore. You know, after the game, do they see him? Sure. But it certainly, because I think with parents, this is, I think, is more true with parents than it is with students or other fans of the game. Like, parents have skin in the game. It's their kid who can play or not. It's their kid's football program that can play or not. So they, you know, do regular students at Notre Dame care as much as a parent would that, you know, their son is able to play? I'm guessing probably not. I don't know how you could. That doesn't mean it's without risk, but I agree with you. It was encouraging to hear that Hunt's belief was that, you know, whatever the outbreak that they've had did not trace back to, you know, a parent coming in from California or Texas or Florida or wherever, that it was, you know, more of an internal and getting their own protocols in order.
It was interesting to hear Rob Hunt describe it. And again, very glad they made him available, because no one in that program in theory would know more about dealing with this than he would. Interesting to hear him describe the path back for guys who come out of isolation after contracting the virus. Brian Kelly had said those in quarantine who don't have the virus but are there for contact tracing are given their own kind of modified alone workout program. Mm-hmm. Those who have the virus, I'm paraphrasing what Rob Hunt said here, but first day back post-clearance will be maybe 20 to 30 minutes. Sorry, first day back, they had cardiac screening from the EKG lab from cardiologists out of Indianapolis. That then gives them an okay to begin a slow progressive return. The first day post-clearance could be 20 to 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise, and that's it. If that goes well, then maybe 50% of on-field activity. Then if that goes well, maybe 75%, and then ease them back in slowly into 100%. Sounds like that's a week's worth of time. I mean, roughly, if everything goes well.
Well, I think that we've sort of been operating under the assumption that, all right, if you're in quarantine, which means you're in contact tracing, it's 14 days. Those are that's the ACC protocols. And then if you contract it, it's 10 days. When in fact, it's really more like 14 days or 14 days. You know, you're out for 2 weeks regardless, in the sense that you may be able to do that cardio that you referenced after you get your cardiac screening, after you've had a positive positive case. But you know, I'm probably as guilty of this as anybody. It's like you see the guys on the list who are out for unknown circumstances. We assume they're, you know, quarantine and isolation in one way or the other. And we're just thinking like, all right, there's one group that's 14 days away and there's one group that's 10 days away. I'm like, well, would they be able to play? I think that at the time, you know, if they we're looking at guys who maybe were positive the week of South Florida, would they be able to play against Wake Forest if it was midweek when that game was still on, if they were positive because it's only 10 days? And it's like, no, they would be out. So I think from now on, it probably helps everybody when you look at these lists and think like, how soon could this guy get back based on his case? It's 14 days in either way. And in some ways, the 14 days for contact tracing sounds a hell of a lot shorter than the 14 days for isolation because, as Brian Kelly put it, for the second 7 days, if you're in contact tracing, you're training. You're getting your cardio back. Right. So then when the 14th day hits, boom, you're back. Whereas if you're positive, you do the 10 days of nothing, and then you have 4 days of slight, you know, incremental jumps, and then you have a chance to return to practice. It certainly doesn't sound like it's you snap your fingers and you're back.
Brian Kelly was asked for his last question, have you talked to other people, particularly in the ACC, who have gone through this so far, because there have been a lot of postponements? And he said, nobody's played two games and taken 2 weeks off, so this is uncharted territory from that perspective. I will add to that personally, you're playing Florida State. You'll be fine. I mean, I don't know about you. I'm actually genuinely curious to see how Florida State plays against Jacksonville State this week, and our old friend J.R. Sandlin, and see, are they actually going to win a game this year? I mean, they are awful, absolutely awful.
They're bad. It's unfortunate that Jacksonville State no longer has also our old friend KJ Sefferson on the roster.
Was he there?
He was there very briefly. Yeah, I think Florida State is just wretched. And, you know, again, I don't want to be flip about this, but if Notre Dame was down 39 players and had to play Florida State, I think they might be fine.
I think so too.
It's just a bad football program. I mean, I don't know what, we haven't done a podcast since our Apple picking adventures last weekend when there was actually really good college football on.
One of us actually stayed in and watched.
Yeah, I went. That's why I pushed Apple picking to Sunday for this very reason, Matt. Notre Dame's schedule looks different every week. Florida State is so much worse than I ever thought possible, and then Louisville is also suddenly not very good. They have some playmakers on offense, but their defense doesn't look any better than it did last year. Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh, and Georgia Tech is also probably as bad as we thought. With that brief, they beat Florida State, maybe they're okay. No, they're bad. So,
Georgia Tech has some players. They're just all young and reckless. I mean, they think they've turned over 13 times through three games. Yeah. I mean, they're absolutely reckless with the ball.
It's harder and harder for me to see Notre Dame not being 6-0 when Clemson comes. I think that's sort of my takeaway from the first few weeks of the season, even as Notre Dame has only played two games and only played one game against a Power 5 school and Duke, who is really bad. So, when Brian Kelly, I think it was the end of his post-game speech last, against South Florida about, hey, we've got a chance to go for a national championship. We've got it, I think we're too damn good was maybe how he phrased it. Mm-hmm. And I sort of view the schedule, and I think I'm coming around to that perspective more and more and more, that not only is Notre Dame maybe a little bit better than I thought, that the schedule is significantly worse, and they really should run roughshod over September and October to get to Clemson at 6-0.
I have no qualms with that statement. I think Pittsburgh's defensive line is really, really good, and they have a tendency to play up to the competition, where I can see that being a good game. But they had 7 sacks last week and still only beat a mediocre Louisville team by 3 at home. They haven't gone on the road yet. It's a game Notre Dame should win, regardless of how good Pittsburgh is playing. Would never have guessed this 3 weeks ago, but Notre Dame probably got lucky not getting Miami on the schedule.
Yeah.
Because Miami actually looks really good.
Not something
and they're playing. They're playing at Clemson at the same time, which Notre Dame's playing Florida State under the lights at Notre Dame Stadium. I don't think I'll be joining you out for that one. I'll stay at home.
Our post-game Shamrock will be heavy on your analysis of Miami Clemson.
Clemson's going to play two harder ACC games this year than they've played combined in the last 4 or 5 years, probably, between Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. Miami. I mean, you got to go back to the Dalvin Cook Florida State, I think, to find an ACC game where they were really pushed. I don't remember them getting into Lamar Jackson Louisville. I think Lamar went down to Clemson, and that was a great game.
No, that was a great, that was an unbelievable game. Clemson won it, but.
Yeah, that may be the last time they were really pushed in the league, and they should get two good tests this year.
I'm looking forward to November 7th for so many reasons, because the irony of Notre Dame and Clemson probably entering that game undefeated. Probably, it's going to have all the pregame hype of, is this a playoff play-in game? What's going to happen? Are they going to play again a month later? And at the same time, you're going to have week one of the Pac-12 kicking off. Yeah. Pac-12 after dark. We'll have Oregon, Washington going on, with the loser also being out, absolutely, because the Pac-12 has zero margin for error. The conversation around college football is just going to be absolutely insane once we get to that point, especially if Notre Dame and can you imagine the loser of that game, whether it's Notre Dame or Clemson, their fans having to listen to all week hearing how their team is out of it while USC goes 1-0 that week and it's, oh, can USC make a run this year? It's going to be perplexing. And the committee is going to – I think they're going to have rankings at that point. I mean, what?
I think
– all right, 6-1 Notre
– Yeah, I thought
– did it get pushed back?
Yeah, I thought Heather Dinich said that got pushed back even more today.
It should if it has.
I mean, it makes no sense to rush it.
6-1 Notre Dame versus 1-0 USC. Who do you like?
I'm really interested to see how that plays out because, I mean, let's say Notre Dame goes 10-2 – and they both losses are to Clemson in sort of, 3-point Georgia style type games. Is that, and they crush everyone else. Is that more impressive than Oregon going 7-0 in the Pac-12? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anyone around Notre Dame can penalize somebody for playing fewer games after shouting that they shouldn't be penalized for not playing a 13th game for the last 5 years. If they
have two losses, they're not.
Yeah. Okay. How about 11-1? 11-1 with a win over Clemson.
Yeah,
versus an undefeated but only 7-0 Pac-12 champ, or an undefeated but only 8-0 Ohio State. I don't know how you get around that.
I mean, I think it's a different conversation if you're comparing them to the Pac-12. That is, if you're comparing them to Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State will have wins over Penn State, Michigan, probably Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. I just think, yeah, brands matter in this. Absolutely. It matters for Notre Dame, too, more often than not, in a good way. The Pac-12 has a lot more to prove and a lot more ground to make up. They don't get the chance to prove that because they're not playing a non-conference opponent. And I don't think a Pac-12 team has run the table in conference since Chip Kelly's Oregon teams. It's been a while, which is why you knew they were done the minute they lost. Oregon lost to Auburn in a game they let get away in week one of last season. They came close. They were a good team. They ended up winning the Rose Bowl, but they just did not get there. I always wondered last year, if Wisconsin didn't lose to Illinois, which is still the most perplexing loss ever.
That was something.
And they went 11-2 with two losses to Ohio State, one of which was a really good game in the Big Ten championship. Would that have been enough to get them in at number four over, say, Oklahoma, which barely got out of the Big 12, that ended up being not really good at all, and ended up getting exposed against LSU? I don't know. Probably not. But I think the Big 12, to me, isn't a whole lot better than the Pac-12 when you look at – I mean, they're getting in on the strengths of Oklahoma and Oklahoma alone. But as we see them lose again another game that they shouldn't lose, are they going to get the same benefit of the doubt if they run the table here that they did the last few years when, frankly, there just wasn't a fourth team to throw in there?
Right.
Last year, there were three good teams. There were three really good teams. And the fourth was kind of whatever. They're there.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The year before, there were three undefeated teams, and Oklahoma just ended up getting
it. It's interesting if the perception of Oklahoma will start to drift more towards the national perception of Notre Dame when it comes to like these big moments and big spots. You know, I think Notre Dame doesn't get the benefit of the doubt nationally anymore because of what happened in the Cotton Bowl and even what happened against Alabama. The fact that they haven't, you know, even the close losses, Georgia, Clemson, Florida State, you know, Oklahoma has won some of these big games, but they're trending in a bad direction that way. I think that more often than not, they do not. And they've looked bad in some spots when, you know, the Kansas State loss is kind of inexplicable. Notre Dame doesn't lose that game ever. So, I don't know the answers to these questions, but I welcome the fact that we get to ask them because college football is like kind of coming back now. Last weekend felt like the opening week of the college football season, even though Notre Dame wasn't playing. You know, sitting there watching Kansas State, Oklahoma, and then Mississippi State, LSU. I skipped pretty much the entirety of Miami, Florida State because it was terrible. But it just feels like college football is back. And Notre Dame will be back on October 10th, hopefully to play a complete schedule from there. But they certainly have gotten a pretty serious wake-up call here in the last couple weeks of this all can be taken away at a moment's notice. And that could be for something as simple as putting too many football players around a dining room table in a banquet hall. You never think about that being a tripwire for a season, but I think these last couple of weeks have shown that it can be.
I do think, and I'm not saying this is right, but I think the eye test absolutely matters with Oklahoma. You've had the number one draft pick 2 years in a row, Heisman Trophy winner and Heisman runner-up 3 years in a row. You have five straight Big 12 titles, which has never happened before. That matters. I mean, we could laugh all we want about should or shouldn't they join a conference, et cetera, et cetera. When you could hold up five rings on your fingers at a time, I mean, that matters when you were kings of the block. And Notre Dame does not have that kind of opportunity thanks to the makeup of the university and their independent status in football. But they also haven't had a Kyler Murray or a Baker Mayfield or even a Jalen Hurts for that matter. So that matters. I'll be curious how Oklahoma is moving forward with a redshirt freshman at quarterback and not proven goods in his fourth or fifth year, transferring from another school the way Hurts, Mayfield, Murray did, where those guys single-handedly won games for them at times to make up for what were flaws on those rosters. I don't know if a redshirt freshman can do that, and considering he lost his second game, the jury's still very much out on that. But like you said, I'm happy to be having these conversations because it beats the alternative.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Shamrock. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure if we're going to do one or two shows, but getting into Florida State a little bit, but maybe just a little bit. I don't know how much people want to hear about Florida State at this point, but it will be interesting to see Notre Dame coming out this week if they can sort of keep the test.
We can get Everett Golson on to compare both programs.
Get the testing numbers, or Aaron Lynch. What was it like to be committed to both programs?
There's a plus.
Notre Dame's testing numbers.
We should have had him for South Florida. We could have him for every week.
Zero on Monday, zero on Wednesday. If they continue in a positive way, Notre Dame will definitely be on the field on the night of October 10th. I'll be there watching that. Matt will be on his couch watching Clemson, Miami, and then we'll have certainly our post-game reaction show on that Saturday night.
I'll be watching Notre Dame Florida State. I just might turn it off when it's 14-0. I have like six screens. I'll figure it out.
Let's make it happen. So until next week, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of the show.